Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the AfriCast. My name is Brendan Lotz, and joining me today is Clinton Matos.
Hello, everybody.
And Robin Lichetti.
Howdy.
How are you guys doing today? He said, recognizing that there was load shedding all weekend and a cold front.
Oh, my God. How did it get so cold so fast? And like, I know how the seasons work, but it seems like every year it just gets, it transitions faster. It's hot and then it's freezing.
It's because the earth is tilting, Clinton.
Oh, I'm miserable. I can't fathom this, because every time I tell someone overseas how cold it is here, they're like, oh, is it snowing and is it below zero? And I'm like, no. And then they say, oh, well, then it's not cold. I can't imagine how cold it is in the rest of the world. It boggles the mind.
And yourself, Robin, having a good week?
No. But here we are.
Yeah. In case you weren't aware, load shedding has been suspended today between 12 and 5 so that Parliament can do some important work. It's kind of inferred that your work is not important. So, and then load shedding will be in effect from 5 o'clock on Friday afternoon until 10 o'clock on Sunday at least. Probably going to get some news at the weekend that there'll be more load shedding. But anyway, Clinton, you...
Who knew that saying point of order for like an hour, 2 hours was so important?
And so energy intensive, right? You need so much power to be able to say point of order, point of order.
All those mics need to be hooked up to electricity, right?
So, yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, all the ministers have probably brought their like... their battery banks and stuff like that.
What do you mean, dude? They make enough money to have generators at home.
No, but they called up Eskom and they're like, we don't want to set it up. Just turn on the electricity. We want to come in and download a series for the weekend and then you can turn it off.
Speaking of which, there's Netflix just released its content schedule for June. Check it out. We'll have a link at the bottom of this post. Clinton, you've been playing a new game from the Warhammer universe.
Yes, it's called Necromunda, Hired Gun. So a lot of people know Necromunda. It's basically a hive city inside of the universe of Warhammer 40K. It's basically every sci-fi trope dystopian city rolled into one, where it's cramped and crowded and the city is so big that it takes over the entire planet. And in this game, you play, as you may have guessed, a hired gun, a mercenary. You play through missions, you play side missions, you try and earn money, and you upgrade yourself and your loyal canine companion called a Cyber Mastiff. That thing, in the picture, in the header image for my review, which we'll link to, which I'll get to in a second, you can upgrade your Cyber Mastiff to be better, but it makes it look like an absolute monstrosity. It starts off as a normal, cute-looking dog, and it turns into a Terminator dog. But anyway, what is this? It's a first-person shooter. It's made by the same people who made Space Hawk Deathwing in 2017. And you have to remember that this is technically an indie game. And it is very janky. It is one of the jankiest games I've ever played. It's even less stable than Cyberpunk 2077.
Whoa.
It is crazy. I mean, I mentioned right at the end of my review, it took me 10 hours to beat the campaign and to play side missions. And in those 10 hours, I had eight crashes. Four of them were where the game completely locked up and I couldn't even access the task manager to end it. And four of those crashes were to the desktop where the Unreal Engine crash reporter popped up. Eight crashes in 10 hours is not a good result. So it's very jank. It's very unstable, but it's decently fun. The shooting is good for what it is. There's a decent range of weapons, but there's just so many problems with it. The audio is all over the place. Even though there's a lot of guns, a lot of them are just bad. The customization system is varied, but while you're shooting people, it makes very little difference to how you're shooting those people. The upgrades that you can do to your character and your Cybermastiff are interesting, but some of them are just pointless. There's just so many systems in here where the developers did the shotgun method to game design, where you just throw everything out there and you don't cut anything. It feels like this game really needed a strict game director to sit the developers down and say, we're cutting this and this and this so we can focus on making these parts better. And the story is the most nonsense BS I've seen in a long time. And anyone who knows about Warhammer 40K knows that the lore is very loosey-goosey. I mean, the owners of 40K, they make a point where the lore is loose, purposefully, so people can create their own stories, but this one is beyond that. It's just nonsense. And man, there's just so many issues. Like those side missions I was talking about are one of the main ways you make income, because again, you are a mercenary.
Mm.
But the side missions are copy-pasted from the main game. They just take a main part of the game and they say, play it again, just verbatim, play it again. And this isn't just me guessing. They actually made a bit of a mistake, because when you played a side mission, in a bit of an error, they flashed the title card of the single-player portion that was in there. So the single-player is, I think, 13 chapters. And when you started this one side mission, the chapter name from the single player showed up. So, I mean, if you want to talk about blatant copy-pasting, that is as blatant as can be. So, check out my full review for this. I'm going to ramble too much if we stick on it for too long, but I did give it a 5 out of 10 to end the, you know, to spoil the end of the review. There is some fun to be had here, but it's so jank and it's so shallow that I really can't recommend it. Even for people who love Warhammer 40K, I think you'll play this and you'll say, this is disappointing. The only thing that's good about it, like Space Hulk Deathwing, is that the artists and the environment designers are top-notch. If you want to play a game just to sightsee, this might be for you. So yeah, that's Necromunda Hired Gun. You can check out my review. And also, if you've bought the game and you are playing through it, I also have a guide to find more chests. Chests are the main way you get guns in this game. And then I also have a guide to farming credits, to farming money, because that's also a big part of this game. So check that out. For you guys, I'm sure neither of you have played it. I wouldn't recommend it, because I know you guys aren't really involved in Warhammer. And this would just be a very disappointing shooter for the average Joe.
Well, that's good to know. It did look a little bit interesting in the in the trailers and stuff.
Yeah, the trailers made it look like a very polished first-person shooter, but I mean, that's the point of trailers, right?
Yep.
No, I'm not saying they're deceptive. They just take what they have and make it look as good as possible, and it's not very good. I'm sorry.
From games onward to operating systems, Robin, you've heard some more about Harmony OS from Huawei. You want to tell us some more?
Yeah, so Huawei held an event earlier this week, and Harmony OS is something that we've been covering for the better part of 2 years now, I think. Again, Harmony OS, Huawei have been kind of keeping it under wraps, kind of drip-feeding us information around it, but I think the reveal earlier this week is probably the largest to date. And for those of you who aren't aware of what Harmony OS is, it is Huawei's kind of IoT-focused operating system. So kind of all the mishigas around their dealings with the US at the moment. HMS is still, I guess, the app delivery portion when you have a Huawei device. But Harmony OS is going to be what their focus is moving forward, as far as enabling a entire ecosystem of devices. And we kind of got a little preview of what it's able to do as far as a connectivity and interoperability perspective. So they're trying to kind of remove a lot of the silos that exist within devices to kind of open up the ecosystem a bit more. The reason why there wasn't, say, a bigger fanfare around this, at least from a local perspective, is purely for the fact that the Huawei ecosystem is far more developed in China than it is in any other parts of the world. So a lot of the devices and a lot of the use cases were very China-specific. So that's kind of the reason why you won't necessarily hear a lot about Harmony OS in the coming months. Perhaps maybe next year sometime, it'll start making a bit more sense. And that's purely for the fact that we don't have a lot of the devices in the country at the moment. That said, Huawei did showcase 5 new devices that really piqued our interest. There's some new smartwatches, also a pair of monitors. One in particular, the MateView GT, looked really impressive. Then there's the FreeBuds 4, which are their wireless earphones. And then the MatePad Pro, which is, I guess, their take on the iPad Pro. So there is some new hardware on the way from Huawei. Whether all of it comes to South Africa remains to be seen. There was a little teaser around the P50 series. It looks like Leica is still a big part of that kind of ecosystem. But you don't know when the P50 series will be officially announced. It was just a little teaser that Huawei gave. So we still don't know what's happening on that front. That said, HarmonyOS, well, portions of it will start making its way to smartphones throughout the rest of 2021. South Africa is a key territory for Huawei, as far as that goes. So we should potentially be seeing it on devices like the Mate 40, the P40, the Mate 30. So those are the devices that were released post Huawei being cut off from the Google ecosystem a couple of years ago. So those kind of newer devices will start getting access to HarmonyOS, and then it will filter down into some of the other devices like the P20, P10, for example, in the first half of next year. So we should start to get access to HarmonyOS and kind of get a feel for what it's all about. That said, it looks like Huawei's taking a very measured approach. They're not trying to rush the process. I mean, they've only been doing this for roughly 2 years now, and they've made quite a few strides in that regard. But like I said, HarmonyOS is still something they're trying to figure out the finer points to. So yeah, it's very much a waiting game as to whether or not HarmonyOS will evolve into the kind of third player as far as the larger OSs go, whether it can actually compete with the likes of the Android or iOS. Still remains to be seen, but it looks like Huawei are pushing forward with this regardless.
Well, hopefully they can get something that lots of people can get on board with, because right now I think folks are a little bit burned. Well, I've spoken to a few people who have been burned by the fact that Huawei doesn't have access to Google services. But
yeah,
if it has its own ecosystem and you're able to use things like Gmail, which is, a dream at this stage. I think that might help win them back some market share. But I don't know. Sometimes I think that this is all happening a little bit too little too late, you know?
Yeah, I think they're probably... my personal opinion is that they still have to kind of wait for those sanctions to drop. I think then they can at least do both at the same time. They can still have access to Google while working on HarmonyOS, kind of see where it goes. Mm. Right now, I think those... Unless you're like living in China, to kind of dive fully in or be fully immersed in the Huawei ecosystem, I'm not too sure what makes sense right now. So yeah, like you said, I think it'll be interesting to see how this develops over time.
Well, then I remember I edited one of your stories which was talking about this, and I can't remember his name. It was one of the higher ups at the company. They said that this is a major focus for the company. So I don't know. Say tomorrow, if the magic does happen, as Brendan says, and we get, you know, they get access back to Google, I don't know if they'll go back. I think they've invested so much time and money into this that they might just say, you know, screw it, and we'll do our own thing, even if they get access back, which will be very interesting. It's also funny because I think it was Oppo. They make a big deal about, hey, we're a phone from China, but we still have Google stuff. I think in the packaging, I think it was Oppo, one of the Chinese brands, they had right on the packaging Google services, like in a bold font. So it's pretty funny that other companies are trying to take up the market share that's been left behind.
Yeah, look, I think they definitely need, if Google opens up again or if the US sanctions drop, they got to welcome back Google with open arms, because I think they have lost quite a bit of ground.
Yeah.
Especially considering how aggressive they were a couple of years ago. So
yeah, I
say the two-prong strategy is probably best for them.
So I do think that even if they go with they continue along the HarmonyOS path, if they do that and they get access back to Google, I'm sure that they will allow you to use Google applications like Google Maps, Gmail, that sort of thing. I can't see them like expressly denying you the ability to use that if they have the ability to implement it into their operating system. But then
just chuck it into the Huawei app gallery, in my view.
Yeah, absolutely, why not? You know, I mean, if you want to create I'm all for a bit more variety when it comes to mobile operating systems. We can debate whether that operating system coming from China is a good idea or not, but I mean, I think that's a little bit of competition isn't a bad thing. However, it all depends on how it's executed. So, yeah, I'm curious to see what happens. And it would be nice to have Huawei pushing other manufacturers to be a bit more daring when it comes to smartphone releases year to year.
Just don't want the return of the bad old days where every single company had their own OS and it was a nightmare. Ooh. Remember Symbian OS on Nokia's? I do, Symbian. And I don't want to go back.
I want to go back. S60, bro. That was the good old days. Right. From operating systems to protecting your operating system. Norton, the makers of Norton 360, or Norton LifeLock, rather, have announced that their Norton 360 product will have a new feature called Norton Crypto. And as you might expect, it lets you mine cryptocurrency on your computer through the Norton antivirus. Now, why would you do this? Well, one of the points that Norton LifeLock points out, one of the points that they make, rather, is that when you use a mining application, often your firewall or your security solution will flag it as malicious, even if it isn't. And as such, you have to disable your firewall and security applications, and that's a bad idea because it leaves you vulnerable. So the idea here is that by using the Norton Crypto feature, you don't have to disable your security features, and it just works. We're not sure exactly how this works. There's a thought that this is part of a mining pool. So essentially, you would be able to get a payout a little bit quicker than if you just used your computer. Especially considering that Ethereum, which is the cryptocurrency you can mine through this feature, is very, very difficult to mine at the moment. To give you an idea of how difficult it is to mine Ethereum, the best graphics card to mine Ethereum at the moment, according to hashrates.com, is an NVIDIA Titan V 12 gigabytes. And with that thing operating at full tilt every day of the month, you can expect to earn $257.34, which isn't that much in the greater scheme of things when you consider that you are pulling, I think it's 200 watts for that GPU all day, every day to power the thing. So, I mean, it's not really efficient, I would say, for most people to do this, but I mean, at least there's a solution, I guess. I also don't know how well this is going to work on like your smaller laptops, even if they do have a dedicated GPU. What I mean by smaller, like performance numbers smaller. And Norton LifeLock did mention that certain hardware would be required to mine Ethereum, but yeah, they didn't go into much more detail than that.
Did they say if they would be taking a cut of all of this revenue?
They did not, which is why Beeping Computer points out that it might be the fact that Norton is pooling all the people that are mining and people get a payout a little bit faster that way. But that also means that they're taking a bit of a cut from the mining as well. So, yeah, the other thing that I do want to just raise is that this has been announced at a time where everybody's kind of looking at cryptocurrency and its energy usage and scratching their heads and thinking that maybe there should be a better way. Whether this will address that problem, probably not. You're probably going to have more folks now that use Norton 360 trying to earn a bit of Bitcoin during their downtime. I don't know. Don't know where this is going, but yeah, if you're a Norton 360 user, you'll be able to mine cryptocurrency soon. And that's it for the news this week. This week, we actually want to throw forward to an event that happens every year and starts up next week. And that event is, of course, E3. This year, it is once again digital. And we will be tuning in, of course, to see what is on offer, just because that's what we like to do. Everything kicks off on Thursday the 10th with Jeff Keighley's Summer Games Fest, and there's a couple of events that are tied to that that are happening throughout the E3 week. We're just going to discuss what's coming up. Let's actually do that now quickly. So on Thursday the 10th, Summer Games Fest starts, and Jeff Keighley will host a live world premiere showcase. So we should see some new games with that. And then what I'm most excited about is a performance by Weezer. You guys excited for a Weezer performance?
I don't know if you're joking, but I've never really gotten into Weezer. I don't know if you're excited for it, Brendan.
I'm really not, actually. I don't know any of their songs aside from Teenage Dirtbag, from Loser back in the early 2000s. Anyway.
Their one album is a meme because it just has a picture of them against a blue background.
Yeah. Okay. And from there, on Friday the 11th of June, Netflix is hosting something called Geeked Week. Which will debut shows and films based on your favorite games. IGN will be hosting its expo on the same day. Then on Saturday, we have the Guerrilla Collective Wholesome Direct, which is apparently a showcase of indie games. Ubisoft Forward, Gearbox, and Devolver Digital will also all be presenting on Saturday. On the Sunday, I think it's the bigger one, because we have Xbox and Bethesda. Then after that, we have Square Enix, the PC gaming show, which is where I often find some cool little tidbits there.
Yeah.
Especially if for PC exclusive titles, free to play games, that sort of stuff. The Future Game Show will also be happening on Sunday, as will the Warner Bros. Game Show. Monday, I think, is probably going to be one of the busier ones with Take-Two, Capcom, Mythical Games, Freedom Games, and Razer all presenting on Monday. Then on Tuesday, it's Nintendo Direct, Bandai Namco, Eureka Games, Games and GameSpot, as well as the E3 Awards. And then on Wednesday, the 16th of June, the Steam Next Festival is happening. There will surely be a couple of other things happening throughout the week. So just keep an eye out for everything E3. Maybe follow the E3 hashtag on Twitter. Let's dive straight into this. Are you guys looking forward to E3 this year? I know last year I was kind of like, whatever, don't really care. But this year I'm kind of keen to see what's coming. What about you, Robin? Keen to see anything this year at E3?
So I was keen a few years ago, and that's purely for the fact that Sony used to do some kind of showcase during E3. That's no longer the case. So from my own personal gaming perspective, there's nothing really that will pique my interest. That said, I'd obviously always keep an eye out for what's happening on the AAA side of things. That's where I invest most of my money when it comes to gaming. I also want to see what that partnership between Xbox and Bethesda that's going to yield. Potentially what Square Enix is working on. So there are a few publishers that I want to see. Also, perhaps if Ubisoft can give us more information on what's happening with Beyond Good and Evil 2. Things have been very quiet on that front. So there are a few, I guess, AAA titles that I would like some more information on.
Clinton?
So I'm excited for a lot of stuff, but I want to start with something we can all talk about, because there's been a leak for 2K. There have been four games revealed for it. This started off as a post on Reddit, and then Jason Schreier, who's a famous journalist, he basically gave it a nod and said, yeah, this stuff is probably happening. So I just want to go over it quick and we can discuss it. The first one is NBA 2K22. I just don't care. Go fall down somewhere.
I wasn't expecting that at all. Another NBA game? My goodness.
Now you can see even more sweat on the players' faces.
Yeah. And even more in-game ads, guys.
and what, booster packs or whatever they call that bullshit. Yeah. Okay,
anyway,
the other one is something called Codename Daffodil, which is a Borderlands spin-off that features the character Tiny Tina. There's no name for it yet, but it seems to be a bit different from the normal ones, because there's going to be multi-class heroes, quote-unquote. We don't know what that is. Again, this is a leak, but I guess we'll see soon.
Is this a Borderlands hero shooter?
Yeah. Oh God, maybe. But there is trademarks for something called Wonderlands, and there's also trademarks for Tiny Tina's Wonderland, so it might just be called Wonderlands. Could be a battle royale, could be a hero shooter. I mean,
could be Borderlands 3 DLC.
It could be a spin-off involving Battleborn. That's what it's going to be. Yeah, that's interesting. I know Borderlands does a lot of bad stuff. The company behind it isn't very good, and Borderlands 3 had one of the worst stories in a while. But its shooting and its looter shooting aspects are really good, and I mentioned this in my Necromunda review. That game is also a looter shooter, but it gets all the looter shooter elements wrong. Borderlands had that stuff nailed down since 2009, and in my opinion, it's only gotten better since then. So I'm really interested in that. This one is maybe the most interesting, though. It's a new game from Firaxis. So if you don't know who they are, they did the new XCOM games, and those are almost universally beloved. They are making a Marvel game, and the pitch for this is XCOM with Marvel heroes.
Ooh.
So it's a Marvel game with turn-based combat, but that's all we know right now, and that's called Codename Coda. I'm very interested in that. Marvel games have been not that great recently. There was the Avengers game, which was universally disliked, and for good reason. There was an Ultimate Heroes game on Switch. I didn't get to play it, but I heard it was fine. And there's just been lots of Marvel Lego games. There hasn't been a real standout game involving any Marvel property, which is weird because the MCU took over the world for the last decade, and it did very little in the gaming front. And the last one is called Codename Vault, a new action game. Is in very early development, and the pitch for this is Cthulhu meets Saints Row. That's very interesting. Apparently, we might get an unfinished trailer or something for that. So those are the four games coming from 2K/Gearbox. I'm very interested to see, but those are some of the only games that we quote-unquote know are coming for certain. You guys interested in any of those? I really like Borderlands, and I'm actually thinking about playing through 2 again soon.
Well, I mean, Borderlands has been pretty quiet in the last couple of months, hasn't it? I mean, there have been live events and stuff happening in the game.
There's been a lot of DLC, but the DLC has been very poorly received by the community.
I'm thinking more that this maybe, like, the daffodil thing just makes me think of, like, maybe this could be a marquee sort of DLC for... I really don't want another hero shooter. Please no... to another hero shooter. We do not need another one. But yeah, I'm curious to see what's happening there. Yeah, more Borderlands will obviously be great, especially if it's good. But I mean, that depends on if it's good.
Anything for you in there, Robert?
Except for a good Marvel, a good Marvel game would always be appreciated. I can, however, say I'm not interested in anything involving Cthulhu. I think Lovecraftian stuff gets way too much airtime, as is. So I don't think it's... unless we're talking about something completely out of the box and crazy and original, I don't have any interest in that. So yeah, probably only the Marvel leak really interests me at the moment.
Interesting, because I don't know if... the XCOM games are really loved, but I don't know if they have a massive broad appeal that Disney and Marvel really like. So a turn-based game is very interesting from them.
Firaxis also did Civilization, so maybe they can... maybe we'll get Marvel Avengers and Civilization.
Yeah, maybe it would be like a turn-based combat thing, and in between combat you can do like... you can manage the Avengers on a worldwide scale or something like that.
Maybe something Secret Wars related.
Oh, yeah. So for those who don't know, the Secret Wars are when the Skrulls invade, and at some point the Avengers get taken to battle world. That's a whole other thing. But basically, it's the Skrulls, the shapeshifters. I know a lot of people are only familiar with the Skrulls from the Captain Marvel movie. The Skrulls are actually usually bad guys. So they usually come to a planet.
Twist on that, but yeah.
They come to a planet and take over everything, and aliens taking over a planet is the plot of all the XCOM games. So that's a good pitch, Robin. That might be what it is. That would be a perfect setting for an XCOM Marvel game. And then
I'll share my bank details shortly.
What's it called? Freelancer fee for the idea. That's actually perfect, because then you could fight quote-unquote good guys, because it would just be Skrulls pretending to be superheroes. That's a really good... I laugh that's what it is, Robin. You should write that as a feature, and then you can say, oh, I was right.
I'll give you the other numbers just now, don't worry.
That's 2K. I also want to mention some other things I'm excited about real quick. Xbox and Bethesda, Robin mentioned it, but I really think we're going to get another look at Elder Scrolls and Starfield. It's been like 2 years since both of those games have been revealed, and I think they might have something to show us. I think they might give us a trailer and say, coming, you know, 2 years from now.
Sorry, I just fell asleep because I'm tired of waiting for Bethesda stuff, because all it's going to be is the same game on the same engine, and Todd Howard's going to tell us how it's got 6 times the graphical fidelity and blah, blah, blah. I don't trust Skyrim. Bethesda. With
you can play Skyrim forever, Brendan.
I don't care. The quest never ends, Brendan. You know that I stopped playing Skyrim when I reached the final boss, and I was very happy. I was like, this is done. I'm done with it. I don't need to play it again on every platform ever.
I stopped playing Skyrim after the first time.
So I just want to mention 3 titles that I'm really excited for, well, hoping to hear more about. So they're all three of them are from Ubisoft, obviously, because I'm quite a big fan of what Ubisoft does. The first one is The Division Heartland, or Heartlands. Is it pluralized? I can't remember. But I'm keen to see what Ubisoft does with Division, if it's going to make it a bit more of a longer tail game than The Division and The Division 2. Because I do think that while those were good games in their own right, they kind of just felt very limited in their scope. I know that in Division 2, eventually you could go back to New York, and that was really cool to see it on a new graphics engine and all that sort of stuff. But I do think that maybe if Ubisoft, they're really good at The Division. They're really good at maintaining that game and updating it and keeping it fun. But I do think that they are limited when they have like, hey, we got a new game and, you know, we have to have a new one in 2 years' time. It kind of ruins the fun a bit for me. So I'd like to see a bit more about that. Then obviously Robin already mentioned Beyond Good and Evil 2, which has just been, we've heard nothing in the past couple of years, except for Joseph Gordon-Levitt coming out and talking about hit record every so often. I mean, I'm tired of seeing that. Show me the game, please. And then this is a stretch for me, because I know that it'll probably never happen, but Wildlands 2, please, Ubisoft. That would make my E3, quite honestly, because
a name I've not heard in a long time.
Yeah, Wildlands was so much fun, and even after the game was released, like, my friends and I would go back to play it because it was just such a fun game. There were some great biomes for you to explore within the fictional world that Ubisoft created that had no relation to any place in the real world. And I would just like to take that to another place, you know, maybe go into Europe. Russia would be a great place to go to. Something like that. Wildlands really was such a great game, and then the sequel, which wasn't really a sequel, failed abysmally. So yeah, a sequel to that would be really, really nice, but I doubt that we're going to hear that, because it seems Ubisoft is investing just more and more in premium games or free-to-play games, and then you pay to access them, which is, I don't know. I don't know if I like that, but, you know, that's the way the world is going.
If I can just interject there.
Yeah.
And we're speaking about Ubisoft. You guys have any interest in Far Cry 6? I know it won't be like...
God.
Won't be seeing necessarily new stuff about it at E3, but do you have any interest in their game at all?
Yes. But not for the reasons that... I'm excited about it because it's going to be political. Ubisoft did come out and say that it will have a political slant. And I kind of appreciate that, because it's always something that's a point of contention. Is this game political or not? I don't know. I'm keen to see where they take the story, especially because it's not the formula of white dude comes to save people from places, or is it? I don't know. I don't know. I'm not excited about it, but I will check it out. Probably.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. The formula has been quite stale over the past few games. Secure area, secure more areas, then lose everything, then get everything back again, then fight the final boss. Yeah.
I mean, it's also just, what's his name? Giancarlo Esposito. Yes, that's it. I'm excited for him because he's just got such an amazing voice, and to see that in a video game, I mean, I can't get enough of it. So yeah, he's kind of the main reason I'm keeping my eye on Far Cry 6.
I do not care. It's going to be the same game as Far Cry 3 with a new skin. I'll never forget, many, many years ago, before I ever started working here, and I've been working here for more than 6 years now, I went to Rage, which is our little gaming convention. And my friend was working as a promoter for the Far Cry series. And back then, it was Far Cry 4 that was the new hotness. And we had pre-release demo kits that you could play of Far Cry 4. And he was standing there getting everyone to play, you know, get hyped about the game and everything. And I played it and I went back to him. I said, Brian, this is the exact same game as Far Cry 3. And he got very angry at me. And ever since then, the games have been all the same. And if people want to say I'm, you know, exaggerating, that's fine. I've played every game since 3 and they've been the exact same thing. Even when they went and they made it a game about the prehistoric past where you could fight mammoths, it still felt like Far Cry 3. The best thing that has happened since Far Cry 3 was Blood Dragon, and that was being the highlight for the series, and that was like a decade ago. I'm not excited at all, and again, I'll put a link to this in the story. The developers did a Q&A, an AMA actually, on Reddit, and a lot of the questions are, will this mechanic from the past game going to be returning? And they were saying yes. So I'm not excited at all. I'm going to forget about this game 20 minutes after we end the podcast.
Are you and Brian still mates though?
He moved to the UK and I haven't heard from him for a long time. So okay. We listen, Brian. I think you're still my friend. I'm sorry I insulted the game that you were being paid to promote.
So I do want to, well, you did mention it, Clinton, was Xbox and Bethesda, or was it you, Robin? My mind is losing me. Something I do want to see from that announcement, less about games and more about Xbox Game Pass. Something I would really like for Microsoft to announce is that Xbox Game Pass for PC and console will reach parity, which essentially means that if you get Game Pass on console and you get Game Pass on PC, you get access to the exact same games. That's wishful thinking on my part. I will admit that, but I do hope that that is a surprise that Microsoft has planned.
The problem with that is some games are only available on PC. I think that's the only, you know, all licensing stuff aside, because I think licensing is the big reason why some are available there and not here, but that might also cause a problem for PC-specific games.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely not saying that this is something that has to happen, otherwise I'm going to be very upset. I do just think that it would be a nice, where it's possible, for instance, right, so with Outriders, that was only released to Xbox Game Pass subscribers on console. And it would have been nice for that to also be available to PC players. Like, obviously, I'm wishful thinking. I am aware of this, that there are licensing deals in place and certain people need to be paid and these games don't just come to Game Pass for free. I understand all of that. I'm just saying, I wish that we could get to a point where Game Pass on console and Game Pass on PC are as similar as possible, where possible. Like, obviously, you can't have things like just trying to find a game that is probably better for PC. Slay the Spire, although I suppose you could play that on console, quite honestly. But yeah, it would just be nice, you know, like Flight Simulator. You know, things like that, that can't really work on a console, but yeah.
I'm very excited about that because Game Pass remains one of the best deals in the gaming landscape. And when we were discussing consoles the other day, consoles and PC, I still maintain that one of the best value gaming experiences for a new player right now is to get an Xbox Series S, the underpowered one, and to buy Game Pass and then just to use that indefinitely. So yeah, if they can, they've proven themselves that they want to improve the service in any way. And I think parity would be a good way to do that.
So there's one more thing that I do want to discuss, and that is Warner Brothers Games. They have a showcase on Sunday the 13th of June. And we've spoken a lot about Marvel, but we haven't spoken much about DC. And, I mean, rightfully so. There's not much happening in the realm of DC unless your name is Zack Snyder. But do we think that we're going to see any DC-themed games at E3?
What's the name of that game that was delayed by like a year? Gotham Heroes, I think it is. Gotham. You guys know the game I'm talking about.
Yeah, you play as... you don't play as Batman. You play as the other...
Yeah, oh my God. Sidekicks. This looks unprofessional for us not to know the name.
Gotham Knights, right?
Gotham Knights, yes. So there's Gotham Knights and there's also the Suicide Squad game. Those are Suicide Squad killed the Justice League. We've seen very little of those games, so I assume they're going to dig them up. I was going to say from the grave, but neither of them are cancelled. They're going to dig them up for E3 almost certainly, right?
Yeah, probably. I mean, there's also the Lego games. I'm counting on the fact that there will be Lego games during this presentation at E3.
Hard of playing. I love Lego, but all those games, well, all the Lego games made by Telltale have all molded into one in my brain. I'd love to see a Lego game that's actually different from the mold.
So I'm just scrolling through the Warner Brothers Games websites, and I'm just seeing like a lot of mobile games, which is to be expected, but like mobile games for Harry Potter and Game of Thrones, for instance, like those are titles that could maybe be turned into video games. I don't think that they'd be very good video games, but I mean, there is that. Yeah. What about that Harry Potter game? Is that ever going to come out?
The MMO, yeah. Yeah, we might see that. I'm sure we'll see these. They were all announced by Warner Brothers and then went very silent. So I think now would be a perfect time to dig them out. And especially, there's a Suicide Squad movie coming up soon, actually, this year. So I'm sure the Suicide Squad game will get some play. I wonder if they'll have it releasing close to the movie. Do you think they'll do that for like cross promotion, or do you think they'll avoid it, you know, to not... fill up the airwaves so people get the movie and the game mixed up?
You know, if I were a marketing person in video games, I would do the easiest job possible. And that, what you just mentioned, is the easiest way to do things. Easiest way to market is go off of the back of either one of those things.
You guys remember when they used to make movie games and they were almost...
Oh, my goodness. Please don't give developers ideas, Clinton.
No, but I'm saying it's weird because the Suicide Squad movie and the Suicide Squad game are completely different. There's literally no connection aside from the fact that these are DC characters. So I would laugh if somebody bought the game expecting it to be the movie or vice versa. And they're like, what the hell? This is completely different. Something that I want to talk about quick, if I'm not cutting you off here, Brendan, if you want to talk about anything else from Warner, is Nintendo.
Oh, so yes. I was going to go
there's a big rumor that today, the 4th of June that we're recording this, there is going to be a big Nintendo reveal of some kind. Now, people have also thought that it might be the release of the Fortnite Joy-Cons, which has happened now. So, I mean, the day's still early. The Americans haven't even woken up yet, so there might still be a reveal later today. But at the time we're recording this, there's nothing. And there's also just announced there's going to be a Nintendo Treehouse at E3. So the Treehouse is just Nintendo's cutesy name for a live stream event where we announce and show off a lot of stuff. Do you think there's going to be a new Nintendo Switch at E3? There's been so many rumors. They ordered a lot of screens from, I think, Robin, you covered it. I think it was Samsung, something like that. They've ordered the screens. There's... rumors ahoy. There's so many anonymous sources who have said it's going to happen. Do you guys think there's going to be a new Nintendo Switch at E3?
I'm going to
say... I think they need to do it.
Oh, okay. Go ahead, Robin.
So, yeah, I was going to say that they probably need to do something. If they are going to make an announcement, E3 or the Treehouse would be a good one. And, hell, if there was another Zelda title to tie in with the launch of a new console, that would be... it is raking money.
There is Breath of the Wild 2 that was announced like 2 years ago at this point and has just vanished. There's also Metroid Prime. I don't know if you guys remember, they announced Metroid Prime was being made and then they canceled development and restarted it. I've never heard that happening before. So those are two massive system sellers. If they come out and they say, brand new Switch launching end of this year, next year, with Breath of the Wild 2 and Metroid Prime, whatever the new one is called, they wouldn't win E3 because you can't win a game, a show. But if they did that, they would steal the show for sure. I don't think any company could compete with that offering. New console, new Zelda, new Metroid. People would lose their minds if that came out.
I'm going to play devil's advocate and say that they probably won't release a console. And even if they do, it is a bad idea, mainly because of the semiconductor shortage globally. We already know that getting hold of a PlayStation 5 and Xbox Series S or X is incredibly difficult at the moment. And unless Nintendo's got a stockpile of silicon that's able to make a new Switch Pro or whatever the rumor mill is calling it, I don't think that now is a good time to release a console at all.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the best thing to do would to, if they have a console in the wings, I think they have a console in the wings. I think that they might reveal it, but they'll say it's coming out like in a year's time.
Holiday 2022.
Yeah. Or they're just banking on by the time they release, they'll have manufacturing. So it's strange because the PlayStation 5 and the Xbox S and X, they all are running on AMD hardware, but the Switch is the only console running NVIDIA hardware.
Yeah.
It's running one of the Tegra chips. So NVIDIA isn't producing any more stuff than AMD is. They are also experiencing massive shortages because of the semiconductor problem. So
I mean,
it's not like because the Switch uses NVIDIA, they have more stock. That's just simply not the case right now.
Yeah, I mean, NVIDIA did announce that they are releasing two new graphics cards this week. So, I mean, my thoughts about not releasing something because there's a semiconductor shortage seem to just be moot in that consideration. But
that's if you believe that they actually manufactured those cards to any real capacity and they don't just have paper launches for the sake of PR. But that's probably venturing into hearsay. So we'll leave that as it is. If I had to bet, I don't think they're going to announce a new console at E3. They might show us there's two new Pokemon games at the end of the year. And in next year, there's another Pokemon game. I think they're going to show a lot of that stuff.
Mm.
I don't think there's going to be a new console. They're going to show a lot of games coming to the Switch that we already know about. They're going to show some indie stuff. And they might do one big reveal. Maybe they'll show Metroid. Maybe they'll show Breath of the Wild 2. But as far as a new console goes, I highly doubt it. Maybe that's just me being pessimistic because rumors of a new Switch have been going around. The console launched in like 2017. People have been asking for it since 2017.
Yeah.
They've been saying, we want a bigger screen. We want 4K. We want this. We want that.
More performance.
And, yeah. And nothing has come of it for almost 5 years. So I don't think this year is going to be any different. I think there will be a new Switch, but not now, not yet.
Finally, the last thing I want to just touch on is the Steam Next Fest, which is probably going to have a sale attached to it. But I do want to talk about Valve because there are, once again, rumors that Valve is making video games again, which is surprising to say the least. And I'm curious to know whether anybody thinks we will see anything from Valve this year at E3.
I think they're going to do something else. I don't know if you've heard the rumor, Brandon. But
the Switch contender.
Yeah, speaking about new Switches, there's some substantiated rumors that Valve is getting back into the hardware game and they're making a portable PC. Now, that may sound bonkers, but if you haven't been paying attention, the market for portable gaming devices has absolutely exploded over the last few years. And I think a big part of that has been the Switch, but the other part has been really powerful PC hardware that you can run off of a battery. There's the company GPD, which I've written about many times on the site before, but there have been two separate Kickstarter campaigns to make portable PCs that can run video games, and both of them have brought in millions of US dollars. So there's a hungry market for this stuff, but the problem is that, and then this is unsubstantiated, and I don't want to just repeat gossip, but a lot of people say that because these are made in China, one way that they get around the prices, even though the prices are high, is by using silicon that still works but isn't the highest performing.
Mm.
So people have been wanting a high quality device made by a big name company. And if Valve got in on that, that would be crazy. On the other hand, do you guys remember Steam boxes? Because I do, and they sucked.
And they were terrible,
Yeah, if Valve is thinking about getting back into the hardware market, all I can say is I hope they learned some lessons.
The first thing they need to do is just, if they are going to release a handheld console, don't call it the Steam whatever. Don't do that. Because I think that there might be a kind of hesitancy to use something that's just Steam branded, right? Like, I understand if you have to use the Steam store and all that sort of stuff, but like, I don't know, as a player and a hardware buyer, I don't know, it just feels a bit off. Like, oh, what are you playing on? The Steam Link.
Yeah. And also, if they make something, in my mind, it would have to be a retail product that you can just go to the shops and buy. Because the problem with the Steam machine is they had unreliable partners making the machines. Well, not unreliable. They just didn't make machines that you could buy at a shop. And also for something like the Steam controller, the haptic controller they made, you could only buy that from Steam themselves.
And only in certain regions as well.
Yeah. So if they make something, they have to do a big rollout. And that's not something Steam has experience with. I mean, they used to do it for their games, but that's decades ago at this point. Yeah. So, yeah, or if they are going to make an honest run at hardware, they'll need to do a lot of things different. And they would not only need to do a lot of things different to make up for mistakes of their own past, but they would need to do something different to separate themselves from the likes of GPD and the big Chinese competitors.
Absolutely. I do think, like, Valve has the platform. They have a captive market, to call it that, where... Like, even if you do use Epic Games, the chances are that you are also using Steam. If you're using Battle.net, chances are good that you are also using Steam. I mean, it's kind of the baseline for gaming. And I think a handheld console that gives you access to your library of games on the go, it's something that is appealing to me. But like you say, Clinton, they need to make sure that they have a robust rollout with enough support and a global rollout at that as well. And I don't know if Valve can do that. I don't know if they have the resources, if they have the backing, because they are, at the end of the day, a very small company. They might make a lot of money, but they are a relatively small company in terms of places like, if you compare them to somebody like Apple or Google, and considering the market share they own, that's really odd. That having been said, I mean, Valve hasn't made video games for a very long time. I know we can talk about Dota and Counter-Strike, Global Offensive, and all those sorts of things, but I'm talking here about like a full-on AAA title. We haven't seen that from Valve since...
Well, we had Half-Life Alyx, but a lot of people would argue that that wasn't really a big AAA game because it was a bit shorter and it was only on VR.
Yeah, so, I mean, maybe Valve is just going straight into the VR thing, going, hey, you know what, we're only going to make VR games from now on. But, I mean, the fact that they had E3 is interesting nonetheless, because it's very odd for them to be there usually. Usually they put their announcements in with the PC gaming show and that sort of thing. So it's nice to see them by name.
It's also interesting. I can't remember who said it. I can't find the quote, but I think it was Gabe. He said that Valve is only interested in making new stuff when it's innovative and it's brand new. Mm. And when they made Half-Life, it was because no other first-person shooters have been made like that. And when they made Portals, because no one else had that Portal tech and stuff like that. And when they made Half-Life Alyx, they made it because they wanted to do VR, because VR is still, on the broad scope of things, is still very new. So we know that Valve doesn't just want to make run-of-the-mill stuff. They want to do things that are different and are new, and portable gaming PCs are a new market, so it would make sense for them to get involved with that.
Yeah, so I'm curious to see what happens, especially just because, I mean, I think I am just starved for news about Valve, and the company plays its cards very close to its chest until it's time to reveal them. Maybe we'll get some more Steam updates.
Aren't you subscribed to the Valve News Network? What's that YouTube channel called? I don't know how they have a whole YouTube channel that just talks about Valve News when there's so little of it all the time.
Anyway, Robin, anything else?
Do you care about... Sorry, just before we... I want to ask Robin, because all of that is very much PC, and Robin's not very PC focus. Do you care about anything Valve is doing?
Yeah, I don't have a horse in that race, unfortunately.
Would you be interested if they made a Switch competitor?
It depends how powerful it is and what I can play on it. Those would be my two biggest considerations.
Yeah, just from
a power perspective.
Yeah, not to cut you off, Robin, but I just want to remind people that the Steam machines were based on Linux or Linux, however you want to pronounce it. It would be interesting if they made a Steam portable console if it would run regular Windows or Linux or allow you to like dual boot. Oh, I can't speak today. It's been a long week. If it would allow you to run both operating systems. If it's only Linux, that would be... that would be a weird way to go.
You know what would suck? Sorry, to cut you off. I'm just thinking out loud here now. Like, usually when you buy a new laptop, you either have to buy Windows separately or the price is included in the notebook for good reason. And I do wonder if Valve is making a console, if they're not just going to run it on Linux because it's cheaper than licensing from Microsoft. That having been said, though, I mean, Microsoft is in Seattle. Valve is in Seattle, so maybe they could have a chat and reach a deal.
They're gonna go down the street and steal it out of the warehouse.
Yeah, just and we'll just take 50,000 codes. anything else that you guys are interested in from E3 before we wrap up or excited about?
I want to see Deathloop. It was supposed to be out already. It's been delayed by more than a year. That's Bethesda and Xbox, so we'll probably see that. I still want to see if Deathloop will release only on the PlayStation 5 and PC and not come to Xbox. That would be hilarious.
And yourself, Robin? That's it on.
Yeah, I don't know. Things are feeling a bit stale as far as gaming goes. I am always open to be amazed and have something wonderful surprise me. So that's probably the only thing I'm worried about, interested in, something that surprises me.
Yeah, I'm very much the same. Just something that is... that gets me excited and amped up. And yeah, I want to get excited about games again. I think the last year waiting for Cyberpunk was very exciting. And then Cyberpunk launched and then everybody was very disappointed. And yeah, I think we're all just looking for the next bit of hotness to kind of get excited and look forward to. Yeah. Also, one last thing, Ubisoft, Skull and Bones. What's happened with that? Is it dead? Have you killed it? I'm sure you have, and nobody cares anymore. Oh, well, too bad, so sad. That's going to wrap it from us for this week. Thank you so much for joining us, and keep yourselves safe and warm this weekend. From myself, Brendan Lotz, cheerio, from Clinton Matos.
Everybody.
And from Robin Lichetti.
Take care, everyone.
We'll see you next week. Goodbye.
Bye.
Yes.
Sorry, the number you have dialed is not in service at this time.